5. Apotheosis. One of the most powerful and beloved of the bodhisattvas of the Mahayana Buddhism of Tibet, China, and Japan is the lotus bearer, Avalokiteshvara, the Lord looking down in pity, so called because he regards with compassion all sentient creatures suffering the evils of existence. To him goes the million-fold repeated prayer of the prayer wheels and temple gongs of Tibet, Om Mani Padme Hum. The jewel is in the lotus. To him go perhaps more prayers per minute than to any single divinity known to man. For when, during his final life on earth as a human being, he shattered for himself the bounds of the last threshold, which moment opened to him the timelessness of the void beyond the frustrating mirage enigmas of the named and bounded cosmos, he paused. He made a vow that before entering the void, he would bring all creatures without exception to enlightenment. And since then, he has permeated the whole texture of existence with the divine grace of his assisting presence, so that the least prayer addressed to him throughout the vast spiritual empire of the Buddha is graciously heard. Under differing forms he traverses the 10,000 worlds and appears in the hour of need and prayer. He reveals himself in human form with 2 arms, in superhuman forms with 4 arms or with 6 or 12 or 1,000, and he holds in one of his left hands the lotus of the world. Like the Buddha himself, this godlike being is a pattern of the divine state to which the human hero attains who has gone beyond the last terrors of ignorance. When the envelopment of consciousness has been annihilated, then he becomes free of all fear, beyond the reach of change. This is the release potential within us all, and which anyone can attain through herohood. For as we read, all things are Buddha things. Or again, and this is the other way of making the same statement, all beings are without self.
Hinayana or Theravada Buddhism, the Buddhism surviving in Ceylon, Burma, and Thailand, reveres the Buddha as a human hero, a supreme saint and sage. Mahayana Buddhism, on the other hand, the Buddhism of the North, regards the Enlightened One as a world savior, an incarnation of the universal principle of enlightenment. A bodhisattva is a personage on the point of Buddhahood, according to the Hinayana view, an adept who will become a Buddha in a subsequent reincarnation. According to the Mahayana view, as the following paragraphs will show, a type of world savior representing particularly the universal principle of compassion. The word bodhisattva, Sanskrit, means whose being or essence is enlightenment. Mahayana Buddhism has developed a pantheon of many bodhisattvas and many past and future Buddhas. These all inflect the manifested powers of the transcendent one and only Adi Buddha, primal Buddha, who is the highest conceivable source and ultimate boundary of all being, suspended in the void of non-being like a wonderful bubble.
The world is filled and illumined by, but does not hold, the bodhisattva, he whose being is enlightenment. Rather, it is he who holds the world, the lotus. Pain and pleasure do not enclose him. He encloses them, and with profound repose. And since he is what all of us may be, his presence, his image, the mere naming of him helps.
He wears a garland of 8,000 rays, in which is seen fully reflected a state of perfect beauty. The color of his body is purple gold. His palms have the mixed color of 500 lotuses, while each fingertip has 84,000 signet marks, and each mark 84,000 colors. Each color has 84,000 rays which are soft and mild, and shine over all things that exist. With these jewel hands, he draws and embraces all beings. The halo surrounding his head is studded with 500 Buddhas, miraculously transformed, each attended by 500 bodhisattvas, who are attended in turn by numberless gods. And when he puts his feet down to the ground, the flowers of diamonds and jewels that are scattered cover everything in all directions. The color of his face is gold, while in his towering crown of gems stands a Buddha 250 miles high.
In China and Japan, this sublimely gentle bodhisattva is represented not only in male form, but also as female. Kuan Yin of China, Kuanan of Japan, the Madonna of the Far East, is precisely this benevolent regarder of the world. She will be found in every Buddhist temple of the farthest Orient. She is blessed alike to the simple and to the wise. For behind her vow, there lies a profound intuition, world-redeeming, world-sustaining. The pause on the threshold of nirvana, the resolution to forego until the end of time, which never ends, immersion in the untroubled pool of eternity, represents a realization that the distinction between eternity and time is only apparent, made perforce by the rational mind, but dissolved in the perfect knowledge of the mind that has transcended the pairs of opposites. What is understood is that time and eternity are two aspects of the same experience whole, two planes of the same non-dual ineffable, i.e., the jewel of eternity is in the lotus of birth and death. Om Mani Padme Hum. The first wonder to be noted here is the androgynous character of the bodhisattva. Masculine, Avalokiteshvara, feminine, Kuan Yin. Male-female gods are not uncommon in the world of myth. They emerge always with a certain mystery, for they conduct the mind beyond objective experience into a symbolic realm where duality is left behind. Awanawilona, chief god of the Pueblo of Zuni, the maker and container of all, is sometimes spoken of as he, but is actually he-she. The great original of the Chinese chronicles, the holy woman Tai Yuan, combined in her person the masculine yang and the feminine yin.
Yang, the light, active, masculine principle, and yin, the dark, passive, and feminine, in their interaction, underlie and constitute the whole world of forms, the 10,000 things. They proceed from and together make manifest Tao, the source and law of being. Tao means road or way. Tao is the way or course of nature, destiny, cosmic order, the absolute made manifest. Tao is therefore also truth, right conduct. Yang and yin together as Tao are depicted in the Taijito symbol. Tao underlies the cosmos. Tao inhabits every created thing.
The Kabbalistic teachings of the medieval Jews, as well as the Gnostic Christian writings of the second century, represent the Word made flesh as androgynous, which was indeed the state of Adam as he was created before the female aspect, Eve, was removed into another form. And among the Greeks, not only Hermaphrodite, the child of Hermes and Aphrodite, but Eros too, the divinity of love, the first of the gods, according to Plato, were in sex both female and male. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him, male and female created he them. The question may arise in the mind as to the nature of the image of God, but the answer is already given in the text and is clear enough. When the Holy One, Blessed be he, created the first man. He created him androgynous. The removal of the feminine into another form symbolizes the beginning of the fall from perfection into duality, and it was naturally followed by the discovery of the duality of good and evil, exile from the garden where God walks on earth, and thereupon the building of the wall of paradise, constituted of the coincidence of opposites, by which man, now man and woman, is cut off from not only the vision, but even the recollection of the image of God. This is the biblical version of a myth known to many lands. It represents one of the basic ways of symbolizing the mystery of creation, the devolvement of eternity into time, the breaking of the one into the two, and then the many, as well as the generation of new life through the reconjunction of the two. This image stands at the beginning of the cosmogonic cycle, and with equal propriety at the conclusion of the hero task, at the moment when the wall of paradise is dissolved, the divine form found and recollected, and wisdom regained. Tiresias, the blinded seer, was both male and female. His eyes were closed to the broken forms of the light world of the pairs of opposites. Yet he saw in his own interior darkness the destiny of Oedipus. Shiva appears united in a single body with Shakti, his spouse, he the right side, she the left, in the manifestation known as Ardhanarishvara, the half-woman lord. The ancestral images of certain African and Melanesian tribes show on one being the breasts of the mother and the beard and penis of the father. And in Australia, about a year following the ordeal of the circumcision, the candidate for full manhood undergoes a second ritual operation, that of subincision, a slitting open of the underside of the penis to form a permanent cleft into the urethra. The opening is termed the penis womb. It is a symbolical male vagina. The hero has become, by virtue of the ceremonial, more than man. The blood for ceremonial painting and for gluing white birds down to the body is derived by the Australian fathers from their subincision holes. They break open again the old wounds and let it flow. It symbolizes at once the menstrual blood of the vagina and the semen of the male, as well as urine, water, and male milk. The flowing shows that the old men have the source of life and nourishment within themselves, i.e., that they and the inexhaustible world fountain are the same. The call of the great father snake was alarming to the child. The mother was protection, but the father came. He was the guide and initiator into the mysteries of the unknown. As the original intruder into the paradise of the infant with its mother, the father is the archetypal enemy. Hence, throughout life, all enemies are symbolical to the unconscious of the father. Whatever is killed becomes the father. Hence the veneration in head-hunting communities, in New Guinea, for example, of the heads brought home from vendetta raids. Hence, too, the irresistible compulsion to make war. The impulse to destroy the father is continually transforming itself into public violence. The old men of the immediate community or race protect themselves from their growing sons by the psychological magic of their totem ceremonials. They enact the ogre father and then reveal themselves to be the feeding mother, too. A new and larger paradise is thus established. But this paradise does not include the traditional enemy tribes or races against whom aggression is still systematically projected. All of the good father-mother content is saved for home, while the bad is flung abroad and about. For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And slacken not in following up the enemy, If ye are suffering hardships, they are suffering similar hardships, but ye have hope from Allah, while they have none. Totem, tribal, racial, and aggressively missionizing cults represent only partial solutions of the psychological problem of subduing hate by love. They only partially initiate. Ego is not annihilated in them. Rather, it is enlarged. Instead of thinking only of himself, the individual becomes dedicated to the whole of his society. The rest of the world, meanwhile, that is to say, by far the greater portion of mankind, is left outside the sphere of his sympathy and protection, because outside the sphere of the protection of his God. And there takes place, then, that dramatic divorce of the two principles of love and hate, which the pages of history so bountifully illustrate. Instead of clearing his own heart, the zealot tries to clear the world. The laws of the city of God are applied only to his in-group, tribe, church, nation, class, or whatnot, while the fire of a perpetual holy war is hurled, with good conscience and indeed a sense of pious service, against whatever uncircumcised, barbarian, heathen, native, or alien people happens to occupy the position of neighbor. The world is full of the resultant mutually contending bands, totem, flag, and party worshippers. Even the so-called Christian nations, which are supposed to be following a world redeemer, are better known to history for their colonial barbarity and internecine strife than for any practical display of that unconditioned love, synonymous with the effective conquest of ego, ego's world, and ego's tribal god, which was taught by their professed supreme lord,